Hi, everyone. Welcome to Packers Unscripted from Packers.com. I'm Mike Spofford, sitting next to the one and only Wes Hodkiewicz. We're coming to you here from our studios at Lambeau Field. And Wes, final show of the week, and that means keys to victory for the Packers as they head to Pittsburgh for Sunday Night Football at Heinz Field against the Steelers. And let's start on the offensive side of the ball. And aside from the obvious, which is to score some points coming off of a shutout loss, unfortunately, what do you see as the keys to victory for Green Bay on offense?
Back in my old newspaper days, I always used to create like these over-unders on things the Packers need to achieve in order to come out with a victory.
Okay.
Kind of like Buzz Williams and his paint touches when he was at Marquette. I think the Packers need to have 30 rushing attempts in this game. I don't care who does it. I don't care if it's Jamal Williams. I don't care if it's Brett Hundley. I don't care if it's Devontae Mays. I don't care if it's Randall Cobb. I think the Packers need to get north of 30 rushing attempts because that shows that you're dictating the tempo of the game and you're moving the football. If you look at the Pittsburgh Steelers, they can beat you in a multitude of ways. You look at that route that they had over the Tennessee Titans. Le'Veon Bell only had 12 carries for 46 yards. A bulk of that production was done through the air. If they need to lean on Bell, they will, but they can beat you in any type of offensive game plan. For the Packers, I think it's very straightforward. I think you need to run the football and allow that to set up what Brett Hundley does in the passing game.
Yeah, I agree with you, Wes. My keys to victory on offense here for the Packers are the exact same ones that I said last week against the Ravens, and that's to run the ball and to protect the ball. And I thought last week against Baltimore, the ineffectiveness running the ball, there were a couple of moments.
Yeah.
But the overall ineffectiveness running the ball, I thought, really hampered the offense. And frankly, the game turned, in my opinion, when it's 13-0 in the third quarter. The Packers are inside the Baltimore 40-yard line and have a 3rd-and-2 and a 4th-and-1. And Jamal Williams got stopped on those back-to-back runs. The inability to run the ball and get a first down there in the trenches when you needed it, that was really the, you know, kind of the death blow in a sense of that game, because one score there for Green Bay at 13-0, the game could have changed around, and the lack of a running game really hurt. And then the obvious, protecting the football. The Packers had 5 turnovers. First time a Packers offense had turned it over that many times in 10 years. You can't win football games that way. And Brett Hundley had done such a good job in his first few starts protecting the ball, and then it really got away from him against Baltimore. And he's got to get back to the way he was protecting the ball and keeping the offense in favorable situations during those previous games.
Yeah, Mike, and you know me as well as anybody here at Lambeau Field, and I don't like oversimplifying things because I think the game's too complex to be able to do that. I have said, though, over this past week, I really think it's a different football game if they are able to score points on that first series against Baltimore rather than having the turnover, because that's where you start to lose that momentum game, and it's so pivotal when you're taking on, you know, especially when you're taking on, you know, uncommon opponents. Packers are running into another one now against the Pittsburgh Steelers, who, as we've talked about, outside of that Jaguars game, have basically done a pretty good job of protecting the football and executing on their opportunities. The Packers' perspective, I think one of the big things for Brett Hundley in this game could be the fact that Justin McCray appears to have dodged a bullet with that knee injury. He was upgraded to a full participant in practice on Thursday, was actually taking some snaps at center because Corey Linsley was limited with a back injury. It sounds like he's going to be okay, though.
Right.
So with McCray likely being able to still fit in at that right tackle spot, that's as normal as it's going to get for this Packers offensive line going forward, and I think could really help out Brett Hundley when you mentioned trying to protect the football and get things established.
Yeah, and you've talked about it all week as well, that in these games with Brett Hundley as the starting quarterback, the opening series for the Packers has been productive on a pretty consistent basis. You had the touchdown run by Aaron Jones at the beginning of the New Orleans game. You mentioned the drive at the beginning of the Baltimore game that unfortunately ended in a turnover. I believe the Packers, did they kick a field goal on the opening drive in Chicago?
Correct.
So when you're moving the ball like that to start the game, it's, yes, you have to capitalize on that possession, which the Packers didn't do against Baltimore, and then you have to build on it. It has to be the start of something, not just, okay, we've gone through our script, and, you know, now what do we do?
Yes.
You know, Brett Hundley needs to be able to take that opening possession and then build on it. And really, when you talk about the Steelers' offense, as you mentioned, and their explosiveness, the Packers need this game to be a limited possession type of game. Don't you think?
This is one that I think if you can get the – I know Mike McCarthy likes over 70 offensive plays a game. I think you're in a great shape if you're at about 60 in this contest. And one other thing to point out with that, when you look at that matchup against the Ravens, one of the big reasons I think it was important for the Packers to score points there is because the Ravens deferred. The Packers were getting the ball first. And in those type of opportunities, you've seen this, you know, work multiple different ways. Mm-hmm. If a team defers and kicks off and the opposing team can go down and put points on the board, that's where you put teams in their on their back, you know, heel a little bit.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I think depending on we'll have to see how this game starts in, at Heinz Field on Sunday. But I think there was an opportunity there, and I think the Packers realize it. They just need to get back to protecting the football, as you said, because the production has been there on that opening series. And when you can get points, when you can get yards, that's what bleeds into those upcoming series after that. That's how establishing the run and establishing your offense is set up. And again, I think that's something the Packers are going to be really critical against a Pittsburgh team that really, on paper, Mike, doesn't have a lot of holes.
Yeah, and this challenge for the Green Bay defense is just as big, and we'll get to that side of the ball next. Back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford here, Wes Hodkowitz over there, and Wes, shifting gears to the defensive side of the ball. Pittsburgh Steelers, Sunday Night Football at Heinz Field. What are the keys for the Packers on D?
Takeaways. I think it's the biggest thing. You and I discussed a little bit earlier this week, haha, Clinton Dix. I know, you know, kind of lamenting not being able to get that second interception. I think you look at a guy like Demaryius Randall as kind of one of my big players in this game, I think, because he's actually, it's very interesting, Mike, for all the injuries that he went through last year, kind of dealing with that groin injury, moving inside and outside. He actually is the only Packers cornerback who's played in all 10 games so far this season. He's found a home there at that star position. Had the three interceptions right before the bye week. After that, I mean, he's still been, I think, a big player in their terms of the run support.
Yeah.
But he said, you know, he's been looking for that interception. It's sort of been out there. He's like, it's that ball's going to come to me. I know it's going to. This is a big Pittsburgh receiving game. We're going to have to see again what Juju Smith-Schuster's situation is going to be with that hamstring injury. But it's a big play offense with Antonio Brown leading this thing. I think the Packers, if they can get a turnover or two in the first half and kind of take away some of that momentum and not allow Ben Roethlisberger to get into a rhythm with those receivers, it's going to go a long way because you know facing them, Mike, they're going to put up some yards. It's about how much you can contain that damage.
Yeah, and especially with them playing at home, it's going to be a night game. That crowd is going to be behind them. You know, it's Thanksgiving weekend. They've got a five-game winning streak. You know, they're sitting at 8-2, and those Steeler fans are you know, looking down the road at, hey, you know, a possible first-round bye, home games in the playoffs in January, which, you know, those fans love to get home games in January, just like the Packers do. So this is all easier said than done, but I think the keys on defense are to continue to do what you're doing in the run defense, because the last three games the Packers have been pretty solid against the run, and we'll have to see exactly what the situation is with Kenny Clark and how that defensive front ends up looking on Sunday night. But then with regards to Antonio Brown, you know they're going to get him the ball. You know they're going to feed him the ball intentionally in a lot of situations, and you just can't give up the big play. Right. Yes, he's going to get his hands on the ball. He's going to move the chains. But if Antonio Brown starts hitting you with 30- and 40-yard plays, whether it's catches and runs or throws over the top, excuse me, that's when this defense is gonna be in trouble. You can't allow that. And those are two huge tasks, because Le'Veon Bell is as good as it gets, and Antonio Brown is as good as it gets. And the Packers defense, they've really got their work cut out for them.
Yeah, I think what Kevin King probably put it better than anybody, you know, when he was asked about potentially matching up with him and the challenge that he presents, he basically said, you know you're gonna get work. Because they're going to target him 15 times a football game. I don't know the exact stats. I'm sure Elias keeps it. I would have to think he probably leads the league in terms of targets per game.
Oh, yeah.
It's always double digits. Ben Roethlisberger's always looking to him. And we talked a little bit about Davante Adams and mentioning those 90-10 balls that sometimes Brown seems to come up with. You know, plays that typically should be 50-50. He just finds a way to always get that edge. So that's going to be really important. I think from the Packers' perspective, though, they have the potential here, Mike, to probably have the most continuity and stability in that secondary that they're going to expect to have the rest of the season. Devon House is no longer on the injury report with those lower body, you know, soft tissue injuries. Kevin King was a full participant in practice this week.
That's right.
And also Morgan Burnett, a full participant in Thursday's practice, telling the media afterwards that he fully expects to play in this game. So you really want to maximize what Burnett does. He has so many different things he can do for a defense. But at the same time, if you can get stability among those top three cornerbacks in your base and nickel packages, it goes a long way with what the Packers are going to be able to do defensively.
Yeah, you mentioned Kevin King, and everything looks good in terms of him being back in the lineup. I'm really curious to see this matchup, you know, the young cornerback against the polished, explosive pro in Antonio Brown. I would imagine, and I can't say this for certain, but I would imagine that Antonio Brown or Kevin King is going to get a lot of snaps against Antonio Brown. Now, if they move Brown into the slot, then it could be Demaryius Randle. I don't necessarily see Kevin King taking him on those slot snaps, but this is what the Packers brought Kevin King here for.
Right.
You know, they drafted him at the top of the second round to be that guy that, at least on the outside, can line up against the other team's number one receiver, and then you see what this young cornerback has.
And that's why Brown is so gosh darn difficult to defend against, because you can move him around. I think it was Mike McCarthy that mentioned he almost is, in some ways he appears to be, a slot receiver, but then you can move him outside, and just big enough, just strong enough, has an amazing vertical that he's able to you know, get separation and make plays down the sideline, even though you might traditionally think of him as more of a slot type body type. So
right.
All that being considered, I do go back to what I said from the very beginning, Mike. If you can find a way to interrupt that momentum, if you can get some stops, if you can get some turnovers, this defense can do it. And it does start with the running game. They went from 27th against the run before the bye week. They're 11th now. They're doing the right things there. If you can hold up to Le'Veon Bell, that's where that sets you up to be able to defend Antonio Brown and those receivers.
Yeah, so we've talked about the Packers' offense protecting the football and the defense trying to get some takeaways. What's the plus-minus number the Packers need takeaway-wise, do you think, to win this game?
I'd like to see them be +2 if they could.
I think that's the minimum requirement to win a game like this on the road.
Yeah, because I don't know how many you can really legitimately expect to get from Le'Veon Bell fumbling or from a guy like Ben Roethlisberger, who outside of that Jacksonville game has protected the ball pretty well in those 9 other contests they've had.
Yeah.
So if you can find a way to protect it on your offensive side of the ball, special teams, and be able to get a couple takeaways and also convert on those too, Mike. The Packers had some opportunities where they did get takeaways these past few weeks and then just weren't able to get some points up with them. If you can find ways to change that, that's how you really open up a football game.
Yeah, when you get those chances, you got to cash them in for sure. With that, we'll throw it to a break. Back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford in this chair, Wes Hodkiewicz in that one. And Wes, looking back at the triple header of NFL football on Thanksgiving Day, it started with a big matchup in the NFC North, as we had talked about previewing it, Minnesota Vikings at Detroit. And the Vikings go into Ford Field and pull out a big victory, 30-23. They built a big lead, hung on in the fourth quarter for the win. And, you know, with 5 games to go, I don't want to say that NFC North division race is over, because mathematically it certainly isn't. But with Minnesota, a 3-game lead now on the Lions with 5 to play, and either a 3 or 4-game lead on the Packers with 5 to play, depending on the result in Pittsburgh on Sunday night, it's going to be awfully hard to catch the Vikings for this division crown.
It is. I mean, you have to give them credit offensively. It really stuck up on me, Mike, but I mean, they are 4th right now in total offense in the NFL. As much as we make, and I've been guilty of it too, put so much on their defense, offensively they're getting it done. I don't know exactly which category it would fall into for awards, but I think Case Keenum, I don't know if it's comeback player, I don't know if it's like a breakthrough type player. It's amazing what he's been able to do this year.
It is.
And we're talking, Mike, about a former undrafted free agent, a guy that came the humble route into the league, and I think has shown, I don't know if it'll be in Minnesota, I don't know where it's going to be, but has shown that I think he can be a starter in this league and has done all the right things. They know they don't have to push it. They understand where they can take chances and where they want to be smart, you know, not to hurt their defense or put them in a compromising situation. We always hear Mike McCarthy talk about the offense and defense need to play to one another, complement one another, and you got to give credit to the Minnesota Vikings. That's what they've been doing consistently throughout this season.
Yeah, that's exactly what they've been doing. And you mentioned Case Keenum. honestly, Wes, he might be the story of the year in the NFL to this point. I mean, yeah. if you were to rank it in, you know, and like you say, whatever the category is, you know, surprise player, off the bench player, whatever it is, he's the story of the season in the NFL. Nobody saw this coming when Sam Bradford had all the injury issues, and then also the Vikings losing Dalvin Cook, their rookie running back that they invested a high draft pick in, and a guy who was looking like, you know, he'd really be a workhorse back for them. Nobody saw this coming with Minnesota's offense, and a lot of it, it's and yes, they rebuilt their offensive line from last year, which was their weakness a year ago, but a lot of this is due to Case Keenum, and you just have to give him credit.
Yeah, and I want to point this out too, because I think sometimes we can fall into these categories of making over-the-top statements and then never really address him again. I was a part of that whole group when he was with the Rams, when they used a restricted tender on him 2 years ago, going, that's ridiculous. Why would you put a first-round tender on Case Keenum? Thought it was absolutely absurd. And to be honest with you, he was still somewhat, I don't think he really got the proper respect when he was with the Rams. Things didn't go his way last year when he was anointed the starter over Jared Goff, and then they end up making that change. It just wasn't the right environment for him. Whatever it is that they got going in Minnesota right now and why he's fit into this so well, I don't cover the team regularly enough to know it.
Right.
But the fact that you're able to go into Ford Field, you and I have been there for Thanksgiving games. It is as ruckus as a crowd gets for the Lions. It's such a big environment. For him to go in there and be that poised, to get the performance they did out of Latavius Murray, Adam Thielen goes over 1,000 yards receiving for the year. First time since, 2009, Sidney Rice with Brett Favre.
Right.
Just a really remarkable turn of events. Their offense controlled the tempo of that game.
Yeah, and I know Packers fans don't want to hear this, but realistically, quite frankly, with where Minnesota sits in the division, as a Packers fan, you actually have to be a Vikings fan the rest of the season, because their upcoming games the next 2 weeks, they are at Atlanta and then at Carolina. Those are two teams that are going to be in this wild card hunt, which the Packers are trying to stay in right now. You want the Vikings to knock off the Falcons and to knock off the Panthers, because realistically, if the Packers are going to continue this playoff streak, which is at 8 seasons in a row, they're trying to tie the NFL record at 9 seasons in a row. If the streak is going to continue, it is most likely going to be as a wild card team, and that means you want Minnesota to keep winning.
Yeah, it's one of two things. Either you want them to fall completely on their face the rest of the way, or they keep winning. As we talked about earlier this week, one of the reasons I thought if you're a Packer fan to be cheering for the Lions is because it keeps things closer. Minnesota's still only within, two games at that point if the Packers can win against the Steelers.
Yep.
Now with them getting that victory, you do run into the time element a little bit. So you're right. You look at the challenging slate they have ahead. A lot of those teams from the NFC South are competing now and in the same position the Packers are, with the Saints kind of running away with that division. So it is interesting. This could be a strange year as far as the wildest card is concerned. Usually it takes 10 wins. We're going to have to see how this one shuffles out, because there is a lot of parity in that conference other than, you know, really those division-leading teams right now.
Yeah, and a lot of games that are going to possibly give a little bit more clarity to the wild card situation on Sunday, and I want to talk about those in our next segment. Back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford alongside Wes Hodkowitz. And Wes, it's starting to become a pattern here that I'm forgetting the sponsor business at the end of segment three. So again, to start segment four, here we go. Picture this. You and a friend are sitting VIP in plush leather recliners watching the Packers on the 50-yard line at Lambeau Field. Nice picture, isn't it? Well, if you enter Cousin Sub's Best Seats in the House promotion, you and a guest could win a chance to kick back on the 50-yard line in style. Two pairs of lucky Packers fans will be chosen prior to each home game for this VIP experience. Enter daily now through December 11 by completing the entry form and submitting. For complete rules and eligibility, go to packers.com/bestseats. Cousin Sub's, we believe in better. And Wes, looking at the slate of games here coming up this weekend in the NFL, we talked about the wild card picture and really what the Packers are competing for here. You look at the fact that Atlanta is at home against Tampa Bay, Carolina's on the road at the Jets, Seattle's on the road at San Francisco. Those are three teams in this wild card picture that are all really pretty steady favorites to hold serve and to get victories. the Packers really need this one in Pittsburgh because you're in danger of dropping a game to all three of those teams that are going to be favored to win theirs, and obviously a lot of people expecting the Steelers to beat the Packers. Packers kind of need to steal one here, don't they?
Yeah, I think so. And you never. The thing is, and you know how this goes, Mike. If the prognosticators were right every single week, I don't think there'd be need for prognosticators.
Right.
But I mean, this league is just such a week-by-week league. So, I mean, it would not surprise me in the slightest if Carolina goes into New York and lays an egg. I mean, it wouldn't surprise me. We've seen some of the issues the Falcons have had at times this season defending their home turf.
Absolutely.
So, I mean, yes, it is going to be a difficult stretch here. There are some really interesting matchups this week, and certainly the Packers need to get a big victory. But like I said in the last segment, I think when you look at the parity of the NFC this year, outside of some of those division leaders, and to some extent even still in the NFC West, I still think this thing comes down to the wire, and I think it's going to be really important for the Packers to start building some of that momentum because you really can't count on, you know, the Panthers to lose to the Jets, but if those things happen, then that's where you start setting yourself up a little bit.
Yeah, you got to start chalking up some victories. Here's a game I want to ask you about, though. I think it's the best game on the entire slate of the NFL this week, the Thursday Thanksgiving games included. New Orleans at the Los Angeles Rams. We've been talking about this one. We knew this one was coming up. The Rams losing last week in Minneapolis to the Vikings, but still a very explosive team. We all know what Drew Brees has been doing with a very balanced offense with New Orleans, also a much improved defense for New Orleans. Rams now looking to avoid a two-game losing streak to stay on top of the NFC West. What do you see with this game? What's your thought?
Well, it's very interesting, Mike, because if the Saints can pick up this victory, it'd be the first time in 4 years they're going to have a winning season, which is, I know a lot of people, when we talk about foundations and programs and that, I think you have to really tip your cap to Mickey Loomis and Sean Payton and what they did there in terms of staying committed to their core. Obviously, there were some changes with defensive coordinator, but they knew what they had offensively. They just needed to prove around that. So they've certainly done that. LA is the most improved team in the league from where they were at a year ago. But this is the type of game I think they need to win to really establish themselves as a front runner for that division.
And this is one I think a lot of people are going to look at with regards to the Saints, because everybody knows that come playoff time in New Orleans, the Saints will be very tough to beat in that dome.
Yes.
But can they beat a high-quality team on the road, which maybe they have to do in January? A lot of eyes will be on New Orleans here.
Yeah, absolutely. Big home advantage there for them if they can capture it.
Yeah, and with that, we got to call it a wrap on this edition of Packers Unscripted. Be sure to follow all of our coverage of the team on Packers.com. On Twitter, you can find him at Wes Hodd. I'm at Mike Spofford at Packers for the team account. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. We'll see you next time.